what if this maybe sets up another possibility for our Sigzil gets the short end of the stick scenario of the obvious thing here would be Jasnah takes her army to go back up Sigzil, who's fairly overwhelmed over on the Shattered Plains. Maybe for whatever reason, she chooses not to do that. Either
and backs up Adolin instead else, or something. Yeah.
Yeah, or something to that effect, and makes a decision that Sigzil feels is irreconcilable with the situation in the way that he sees it.
Yeah, I could absolutely see that happening. What's Jasnah's motto? She has to do like whatever does the least bad for the most amount of people or something like that. That's not
right. Yeah, pretty close. I think she would say the most good for the most people.
Okay, yeah. So with that logic, she's about to make a decision, presumably, of she needs to go make a decision with her army now to do the most good for the most people. Welcome back to Following Know It On, a Stormlight podcast. This week is episode 251, and we are in chapters 69, 70, and 71 of Wind and Truth. Paul, how are you?
Fantastic, as always. Plugging along, pushing through this book. Excited to get into it.
Elliot, you had to host an episode without me last week. How'd that go?
It went fine. I'm a little bit sad that our coup did not stick and that our newly appointed leader, Tim, appears to already have been dethroned and re-replaced by our original leader. But I'm glad to have you back. Promise.
I think we should host a vote, democratic vote of who should be the co-host, Trevor or Tim. They've had a week to decide, to think about what it would be like now. And so Elliot and I attempted to remove Trevor from his high and lofty seat, and with us unsuccessful, so we're now calling on all of our friends and supporters.
Yes, but in order to do that, someone would have to post that poll, Paul, and I have all the passwords. So,
oh dear. Okay. Well, darn. Comment on the video. That's how we will. That's how.
Yeah, we'll see. That.
He's going to disable comments on the video.
We'll see.
Yeah. I'm going to have to watch like a hawk before stuff gets deleted. Anyways.
All right. Paul, do we have a patron?
Thank you for asking, Trevor. We do. And I'm very excited. This is one of the funnest names I think that has come across our anything, our Patreon, whatever. It's very fun, and I'm very happy with the cup too. I always choose my cup before I even look to see if there's a new patron, and my cup this week, it's just a standard looking cup, and it's from Terry Black's Barbecue. This is my shameless plug. Of course, if you are in Texas or if you have ever gone to Texas and you have not had Terry Black's Barbecue, you have done yourself a disservice. It is unmatched. I know that there are some other incredible places, but from where I've been, it's so good. If you know for sure. I'm sure there will be people who know about Terry Black's and will sing its praises, but that's not the main point. The main point is we have another surgeon this week, and it's a name and a title, and it's a good one. It's Danny the Spoon Lord. So Danny the Spoon Lord, I did fit the name on my paper, but man, was it a little bit of a stretch, and it does not show all in once. All on one. I'll try to rotate my cup so people can maybe see Danny the Spoon Lord. And I'm trying to get rid of this glare, but I'm not succeeding. Danny the Spoon Lord, thank you for your support. We always need surgeons on the team. So
I have to ask, why is the P capitalized?
No, that's a lowercase p, but lowercase p's are tall, aren't they? It's like an L, like a lowercase L, isn't it?
No, maybe it's not. Are you being ironic or not?
I'm now questioning everything that I know.
Oh, no. Do I need to send you back to Spalding in like second grade?
Maybe. Well, okay. So what threw me off is that
my 4-year old could teach you how to correctly write P's below the line.
So, all right. So I normally write in all caps. I don't know why I did. I didn't this time because I was like, okay, Danny the Spoon Lord. That's a longer one. I'm gonna have to try to fit this. So I tried to capitalize, you know, the D and the S and the L in the title was capitalized as well. So. But now you're roasting my letter P, and
I'm just asking questions, Paul.
I have no defense. I will accept all roasts.
I mean, in your defense, you're probably used to writing capital P's because that's how your name starts.
That is true. That's in my head. P is always capitalized.
That's fair. That's fair.
Because I'm the one writing it, and my name starts with a P. So there we go.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Danny the Spoon Lord.
Yes.
All right, Elliot. Chapters 69, 70, and 71. Do you have a summary?
I can certainly try. 69, 70, 71. It jumps in with Nail is now on the scene with Kaladin and Zeth. So Nail and Kaladin get into some philosophy debate, which I heartily enjoyed as someone who myself enjoys a good philosophy debate, although I was rather disappointed with both sides of the argument. We'll get into it. And let's see, they ramble on for most of a chapter. I think the very last page of 69 is Jasnah musing about her defenses and feeling like she's unprepared. And then chapter 70, Nightblood and Zeth get into some philosophy and what is the difference between right and wrong and how do you tell? And all the really big classic ethics questions. I'm enjoying that as well. They do get to the Lightweaver Monastery and are faced with a puzzle, a riddle that they have to solve. And Zeth is shoved into a bit of a new challenge, not a battle, but a bit of a riddle. The second part of chapter 70 jumps over to Venli. Kind of random, this actually. Venli leading her people through the chasms at the Shattered Plains, and they're discussing Eshonai's death, I think, actually, is what they're talking about as they're walking through the chasms trying to get to the city in the middle of the Shattered Plains. Chapter 71 jumps back to Zeth trying to solve this riddle and defeat the Lightweaver Herald, and Syl joins in to help him, and the two of them are able to unpuzzle the riddle and defeat the honor bearer and get the blade. Oh, and then it does wrap up with Jasnah wrestling more with her strategy and ultimately landing on the fact that maybe Odium is not coming for Thalen City and it's all a ruse. And that's where we end chapter 71.
Yeah, that Jasnah. I have a couple thoughts on that. Jasnah epiphany, but we'll get there. All right, 69. Kaladin and Nail finally have a debate, a good old-fashioned I'm right, you're wrong, here's why debate. Paul, what do you think?
Okay, I really enjoyed this. I was really curious to see how this would go down. Like, so where we left off was like Nail walks up and is all like, you've been doing this all wrong, etc. And now we get the continued conversations here on of them all traveling together. I did not have Nail joining alongside them on their journey on my bingo card for sure. I figured it'd be very likely to have an altercation or something with Nail, but didn't expect it to ultimately be the third member of the group, if you're not counting Spren. There were a couple things that I thought was interesting. One, I wrote this kind of in my live reaction as I was reading this chapter. I feel like this has kind of reset Kaladin and Zeth's relationship. They've really been the start of this bond, and that really was pushed forward, at least on Kaladin's side, with his recent realization that Zeth is more akin to Tien than he is to himself. Kaladin has never been more motivated to help Zeth, but now he feels a bit helpless in the situation. And so that's kind of a bit of a awkward predicament for Kaladin, and a bit awkward. And I'm wondering, with the debate and everything going on, is Kaladin going to have to become the, you know, the counselor, the therapist for not only Zeth, but like for Nail? I know he was also sent somewhat to try to help Ishar somehow. I don't know how that will happen, but my toss it out there theory is that is what his fifth ideal will be tied to, and we will get some big breakthroughs somehow.
Whose fifth ideal? I lost you there.
Kaladin's fifth ideal. So I can't I have a beginning and an ending. I don't know how we'd get there, but in some way his fifth ideal will be tied to somehow helping therapize, I don't know the term for it. provide therapy or create a better understanding and a better personal relationship with Nail and Ishar somehow. I don't know. He's going to fix them somehow.
I look forward to seeing what the auto caption comes up to try to substitute whatever that word it just heard. All right, Elliot, you said that you were a little disappointed by both arguments. What do you mean?
Well, here's the thing. Imagine trying to have a philosophic argument with someone who is, first off, 4,000 years old, 5,000 years old, something like that. The dude has been around the block and is going to know a lot of things. But second, is also certifiably insane. And so how do you go about having a rational discussion with such a person? That's a tough ask to begin with. But the two sides of the argument, this is a really fascinating argument. I love this a lot. Nail, as we've seen before, is very much on the side of the law. His whole thing is the law trumps everything. It is all about the law. Whatever land you're in, all it comes down to is you obey the law. And Kaladin is trying to poke some holes in this of, well, but isn't the law just as flawed as the humans who wrote it? And Nail is trying to make a case that somehow it's not. Somehow over time the law gets perfected, or laws are hard to change, or at least they're supposed to be. So humans might be finicky, but the law changes less, so the law is better than the humans. And then Nail kind of poses the question back to Kaladin of, okay, well, what would you propose is the standard? If not the law, then what is it? And this is where I was a little disappointed with Kaladin and his side of Kaladin's best response back is human decency, which has all of the same problems with it as what Kaladin is trying to claim are the problems with Nail's argument. But at the same time, I don't know that I expect Kaladin to be a philosopher. I'm not so disappointed in Kaladin per se. I think he's doing a good job of just trying to help Zeth and not doing amazing in a debate against someone who is 5,000 years old. I don't know that I hold that against him, even though I think we're missing some very big questions here in this argument that I hope we get to as we continue on with these characters.
Well summed. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay, thank you, Trevor. There's a couple things I wanted to point out. Somewhat moving on from the debate, there were a couple little things that are mentioned that I thought was interesting. On the topic of, okay, so Nail holds only to the law, right? That's his whole thing. Is he follows the law, the letter of the law to the T and onward. What I thought was interesting is that he talks so fondly of Yezrian, and we don't know that much. We haven't seen that much about Yezrian, but I wrestled with this, and I'm trying to piece it all together, but my understanding is I don't think Yezrian or the other heralds held so perfectly to the law or at least if they did, it looked very different at that time, and I'm sure Nail thought very differently, 3,500 years ago. But I guess I was confused. Obviously, they were heralds. I'm sure all the heralds have some respect for each other. They've been through so much over such a long time. So that's fair. I might be digging way too far into this, but I feel like we've seen this juxtaposition of Windrunners and Skybreakers, sort of a battle of letter of the law versus spirit of the law. And I guess I was surprised to see that my mental picture is that Yezrin probably did not perfectly uphold the law, and thus Nail would look at him not so fondly. Also, we knew that they were previously enemies, but then became allies. So I guess I was surprised to see that. I don't know if that was surprising to y'all, but my mental picture is that the heralds were not particularly rule followers. Maybe they were. We've seen the broken versions, so to be determined. But yeah, I was surprised to see that.
I think with the old heralds, like the flashback heralds that were been seeing in this book, I think they're doing their best to abide by rules and set rules. I mean, some of them are rulers. Some of them are, rule makers of old ancient Roshar. And back then, I go to the discussion between, is it Yezrin and Chanarach, I think, that Chanarach says, we were on the wrong side of the Odium conflict. They had Odium with them against Nail's people. So I do think our heralds, at the time of them really establishing themselves as bearers of the Oath Pact, that they really were trying to do their best to abide by rules, set rules, be rule followers. I'm not sure if, that holds up, and we'll see that, but.
Yeah, that's fair. There, like I said, that's all based off of a mental picture that I have of our heralds still, while we're currently still learning about them and figuring out more of how they actually were. Another thing that I thought was interesting, and we've gotten hints to this, or maybe not specifically said outright, but it sounds like the heralds did have access to at least many, but if not all, of the surges. Because Nail says what led him here was hearing via Elskalling, hearing the tones, the music, the sound of Roshar, which I thought was a really cool picture. First of all, I really liked that. Every time we have been getting into these, the tones of Roshar and these elements, I feel like that's been a very low-key hidden aspect throughout a long time now. I think, what was that, the end of Words of Radiance or something, we get mention of that, and maybe earlier, I don't remember where all. I've kind of perked up and tuned in, and so I thought it was interesting to hear that, and also hear that they were using lots of surges. I'm guessing that became more standardized. We talked about this a little bit, but thought that was cool.
I mean, it depends on what you qualify as the first reference of the tones of Roshar, because you could qualify the Wandersail chapter of Hoid playing the music and then Roshar plays back. You could qualify Yasna soul casting the robbers in the alley, and then Shallan hears a pure tone or something like that. There's a one liner in there, but it's not really explored till Rhythm of Four, obviously.
Yeah, it's been a very behind the scenes thing,
right?
I have a feeling that we don't have to talk about it more. I have a feeling that that will be relevant to back half. I think we're gonna get a lot. I think that's the very background thread that may be covered long term about Roshar, which I think would be really cool.
Nail dismisses the wind. Speaking of the old Roshar stuff, Nail flippantly dismisses the wind in his discussion with Kaladin and thinks she's dead or claims she's dead. I don't know if the wind is specifically hiding from Nail or what, but Nail thinks the wind is dead, or at least says so.
I kind of thought this mention was of note. I think Kaladin makes some kind of reference to the wind speaking to me, and Nail immediately fires back, "Oh, you should ignore that. That's just an old dead god." And I kind of had a little red flag go up there. Like, wait a second. Why do you care about that so much, Nail? First off, if it is an old dead god, why does Kaladin have to ignore it? And two, seems like you maybe oversold there a little bit. What does Nail know? What does Nail know about the wind?
And I'm also curious. He doesn't dismiss that Kaladin has heard the wind. He acknowledges Kaladin has heard the wind. But then that's also not mutually exclusive that to him, the wind is dead. So the wind could also be speaking from the grave, which didn't really make sense to me. But yeah, he very quickly dismisses it. And I think that's interesting because if there was ever an original like rule maker, that's his whole thing is when he goes to arrest Lyft in Edge Dancer, he asks, "Hey, is this in the rule book on wherever nation we're standing?" And then he has to go by that. Why is he dismissing the wind as a moral regulator? If the wind was here first, shouldn't that be his whole thing?
Wind has continued to be like one of the main mysteries in this book. So I wish I had more to give to that, Trevor. But
well, and remember, a lot of this started with the wind calling out to Kaladin. I don't remember exactly what it said, but "Come help me," or something to that effect. So yep. part of the mission that Kaladin is on, I think, is to find and help the wind, which seems to imply that the wind is trapped or imprisoned or in need of help, and being in Shinovar is the place to be to help. So that's another part of the quest here, I think.
Moving forward into our Lightweaver contest, Zeth, Kaladin... It's actually Zeth and Syl who piece through this Lightweaver contest. But as we walk through the door, is it Nightblood? Who's Nightblood talking to? I don't remember. Nightblood is...
This is another good scene. Nightblood is talking to Zeth.
Okay.
Zeth is walking into the monastery, or they're walking like down this scenic valley to get to the monastery. And Nightblood just out of nowhere chimes in, basically saying, "Hey, Zeth, I see you're sad. Let's talk about it." It's like Nightblood is putting on the therapy hat for a little bit and trying to weigh in here. But I thought this was a big moment because Nightblood finally asks the question we've been asking Nightblood to ask for every book we've ever seen him in. He finally comes out and says, "Well, what is evil?" And even rambles about it for a little bit. "I was created to destroy evil, but I've never actually stopped to pause to think about what is evil. And Zeth, I thought you were good, but sometimes you kind of do evil. So are you evil? Are you good?" And it even goes so far as arriving where 75% of every philosophical discussion I feel like I've ever had at, which is, the trolley problem. Are you guys familiar with the trolley problem, Trevor? I know you are.
Yes, of course.
Paul, do you know what this is?
I think I understand, but not 100%. So I'd let you explain it.
I'll summarize it real shortly. And they do this in the chapter. They basically, Nightblood, I think, kind of spells this out, or maybe it's in Zeth's words. It's kind of the ethical dilemma of if a I don't know why it's a trolley, but it's a trolley for some reason. A trolley is hurtling down the hill. It's out of control. It can't be stopped. It's about to run over one person. No, three people. It's about to run over three people. You have the choice to pull a switch to change the trolley to another track that would still kill someone, but it would this time only be one person, only one person standing on that track. So the question is, do you pull the lever? Do you become an agent in the system, arguably intentionally causing the death of one person, but saving three? Or pick whatever number you want to throw on the tracks there. Because this question comes up of, is there a time when it is right to kill an innocent person? Maybe there is. Maybe there's not. It's a tough one. And you can kind of apply that. You can kind of paste that over a number of different real world scenarios you might try and spin up to kind of ask the question of, how do you make really hard ethical choices? That's what Nightblood and Zeth are kind of getting into, is how do you know? How do you know what is good and evil? How do you know what is right and what is wrong? And this kind of ties back, I think, to the argument that Kaladin and Nail were having, that I'm sure Nightblood was listening in on, is what's the standard? What's the ultimate moral law that you should live by? And I think it's a great question, one we probably all should wrestle with.
I was expecting like moral dilemmas and philosophical discussions in this book. I was not expecting them from the Kaladin and Zeth storyline.
Yeah.
The Taravantian and Dalinar in the armchair discussions, I was expecting more of that. Maybe not with those two characters, because they're a little preoccupied at the moment, but that type of discussion, you know, I was fully expecting, but I was not expecting it between, you know, Kaladin and Nail and Zeth and Nightblood. Like, there's some interesting dynamics here. And going back to the little trolley problem you have there, if you're Taravangian, you definitely kill hundreds of people to maybe save many more. To maybe save many more. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, once you start talking to Taravangian about ethics, things go really wild really quick. So that's a tough one. I was going to say, Trevor, to what you were saying, once I knew that Kaladin was going with Zeth and he was kind of tasked with this mission to, I guess, be a good influence on or try to help Zeth and as well as Ishar, I was expecting these. I was not, however, expecting this with Nightblood. Nightblood and Zeth, I think, is pretty comical. And I agree that this was a big scene. This was a big moment. And I cannot dismiss the voice, the thought that is telling me that the relationship or bond between Zeth and Nightblood will only continue to grow in some Cosmere way that we don't know about yet. I feel like it has really been pushing in that direction, and there's been so much stuff, as well as the whole, like, how scuffed and weird the bond that Zeth has with his Spren, or how his Spren actually acts. It makes me think that there's going to be something where Nightblood is somehow going to provide the Spren-like dynamic to Zeth's Radiant. I don't know how that could work. Don't have any answers. But I feel like it's really been pushing in that direction, which I think would be really cool.
Up until this chapter, I don't think I've ever considered like a character arc for Nightblood. I've never considered him progressing like a character or even like a Spren. So with that being said, I think you're right. I think Nightblood may actually get some sort of progression here. I'm not sure it's with Zeth. I'm still not convinced Zeth is making out of this book.
That is fair. I will say, you know, you're right. I didn't expect growth from Nightblood, but he says earlier in the book, right, that his mind is made of metal, and that just means he's slow to change, but not that he does not change. So there you go.
Anything else from the Zeth stuff before we get into like the actual trial here?
I think the next stuff I have is on the trial itself, where entertainingly Syl comes to join him.
Yeah, when Syl came to join it, I had this thought in my head of like, all of these trials, Sanderson is kind of just like throwing a different twist on each of them and seeing how the scene plays out. He'll pick like a couple variations of how these trials could go. What if we, you know, went into Shadesmar to do this trial? What if we, you know, had, I don't even remember how the early trials go. So I'll stop right there. But this one is Zeth and Syl figuring it out. And there's some number, I don't remember how many number, 30 some odd illusions of Shalash. And they're each different in one way or another. And then turns out that it's not any of them. It's the mural on the floor. And the Lightweaver guy is hiding in the floor. What do you guys think of that? This trial and just all the trials in general, how are we feeling about them?
At first, whenever we were after the first trial, and then when we were going onward, I was almost a little sad that I wanted the rest of the trials to just be like a plain out fight, which most of them I think have been pretty much. But I've really liked this switch up, and I like that it seems very true to the order. This seems like a very good order, like Light Weaver trial. Of like all these illusions, find the right one. You know, I think that was really cool. And I like that there was like a little switch up. I also really appreciated Syl in this chapter, really appreciated her help. It felt like Zeth had a good, helpful spren, which was refreshing to see. So I was a big fan of that. Thought it was a clever conclusion, and yeah, I liked it. Basically no complaints from me. I know it feels like we've kind of had to like rapid fire a lot of these trials to like show and do all of them in pretty good time, but also still make them creative and cool, not just like another fight each time.
I kept thinking as we're knocking out more and more of these, What is Zeth going to do with all these honor blades at the end of all this? I get it that he's got to prove himself over all these different honor bearers to complete his pilgrimage and ultimately, I'm sure, face the unmade or whatever is at the end of this journey. But we're also building up a collection of really, really powerful weapons. Is he just going to donate these to a museum when he's done? Like, who's getting all these at the end of the day?
Oh, come on, Elliot. We can be really creative here. One of a couple things could happen, okay? First, and probably craziest, is we have like some kind of wild like Transformers assemble moment where all the Honor Blades like merge into an Ultra Honor Blade, right? Which he can wield and
into Honor's Odium. Blade?
Yes, literally. That's when Honor will come back, right? And Honor, you know, himself will wield it, right? Okay, there we go. That's one option. Second, it is like two sides of one sort of prediction. You could reform the Oath Pact, let's just say. I don't think that will be the case. I don't think people really want just a second Oath Pact. But you could totally have an Avengers Assemble moment. What happens if you, you know... let's say some characters like Adolin or something who are not Radiant, but you give them a good Honor Blade and they don't have to be Radiant, but they can, you know, really level up their powers. I don't know. I feel like there's lots of people who could get them. I low-key feel like Zeth could just wield all of them. I don't know. Somehow he'd do it. I feel like there's... I'm very, very curious what happens with them, actually.
Or do we just get a random spur-of-the-moment decision by kind of crazy Zeth at the end of all this, and he just chucks them all in the ocean? And he's like, nobody should ever have these again. Gone.
Titanic moment.
Yeah, I could totally see that.
The Titanic, when she throws the emerald over, and she's like, no one should have this. It's too valuable. And at the end of the movie.
Well, I was thinking of the Silmarils where they like cast them into the ocean and into the volcano, but Titanic's also good. I didn't know. I didn't actually know the Titanic reference. So
have you not seen Titanic?
I have, but it's been like many, many, many years. Did not remember that detail. So I'm very sorry. But I will say, I could absolutely see that happening, Trevor.
I hate to break it to you guys. The book's already told you what's going to happen to them. Do you guys not remember?
I do not. I had another kind of wild theory, but
all right, go for your theory, and then I'll spoil what has already been told to you.
My other theory is that Kaladin is somewhat charged with trying to help or convince Ishar. Let's say there's some crazy breakthrough, hypothetically, and Ishar is now honorable and looking to help out. I would throw out a crazy thing that somehow him and his very elevated bondsmith powers could utilize all the honor blades in some crazy cool way. That'd be my other theory. And then now you can ruin our day, Trevor.
Here you go. All right. So Renarin already told you back at the end of day two, when there's like 12 people standing in Shinovar in his little mural vision thing, and it's like one person of each race plus Syl, Kaladin and Zeth, and he's just going to give them back to the heralds, and they're going to like go right off into the sunset or whatever they're going to do with them. That's what's going to happen.
Maybe.
It's awfully kind, considering like two books ago, wasn't the plan to like kill all the heralds, by the way?
True. Yeah, that was Oathbringer's plan. Yeah,
we did not do that, which I'm very grateful for, to be honest. I kind of wasn't a fan of that plan. Yeah, that's fair. There's still time.
There's still time.
Yasna is still alive.
True.
Apparently.
And Yasna's about to be a little pissed because she's been sent on this whole ruse thing
also,
that we have.
Also true.
Yeah, so she's about to come back with a vengeance. All right. Anything else with the Zeth Kaladin stuff?
No.
Okay. Let's talk about Yasna. Yasna has been sent to Thalen City for its defense. There's a fleet headed towards Thalen City. And by the end of the episode here, she has deduced that it's a sleight of hand. There's not actually a army headed with this fleet. It's just a bunch of like ships to appear that there is a big army headed for Thalen City. And she is wasting resources at Thalen City. How do we feel about this?
Well, to be specific, she's logically arrived at this conclusion. She hasn't proven this.
Correct.
I think we leave her at the moment where she says, quick, go get some scouts, send them off to go see if this is true. So this is a guess still on her part. Could be wrong, but might check out with a lot of the other evidence that not only Yasna has seen, but we have seen armies elsewhere in Roshar seem to be stronger than they should be, and it might make a lot of sense if there is not actually an army coming to Thalen City.
I just kind of zooming out back towards the beginning of Wind and Truth, I was never a huge fan of the we show up day one, surprise, there's three armies headed to three separate spots. So for one or more of them to be a ruse, I'm actually a fan of, because the idea of diving for as much territory as possible was kind of weird to me. And for Odium to play the where am I actually going to go, going to get you to split your forces. That's more appealing to me than just the battles everywhere type thing. So I actually enjoy this reveal that there's not actually a army coming, or maybe there is, but that's the conclusion the Austins come to.
And this sets up a new possibility, I think, in our storyline here, specifically in my mind with Sigzil. We're kind of waiting for a moment where Sigzil is going to get stabbed in the back or left out to dry or something to that effect. We've kind of implied that from other sources we have on Sigzil that we think that has to happen. What if, let me step back. Yasna now does not have an army potentially coming her way. So now she's going to be faced with the question of, okay, what does she do? She has an army with her. She has an Oathgate. So where does she now go? She has an Oathgate. She should be able to just go portal over to the Shattered Plains, right? She could probably portal over to wherever she wants to go. What if this maybe sets up another possibility for our Sigzil gets the short end of the stick scenario of the obvious thing here would be Yasna takes her army to go back up Sigzil, who's fairly overwhelmed over on the Shattered Plains. Maybe for whatever reason, she chooses not to do that. Either
and backs up Adolin instead else, or something. Yeah.
Yeah, or something to that effect, and makes a decision that Sigzil feels is irreconcilable with the situation in the way that he sees it.
Yeah, I could absolutely see that happening. What's Yasna's motto? She has to do like whatever does the least bad for the most amount of people or something like that. That's not
right. Yeah, pretty cool. I think she would say the most good for the most people.
Okay, yeah. So with that logic, she's about to make a decision, presumably, of she needs to go make a decision with her army now to do the most good for the most people. Maybe Sig still gets hosed. I don't know.
That is interesting. So I'm not convinced that this is a fake army yet. I'm curious to see what it concludes, because it very well could still be a trick. But my first instinct, I'm really grateful for what you said, Elliot, because my first instinct was, okay, if this is a fake assault, right? They're not actually in danger. It's just all a scam. In my head, I'm like, okay, what does that mean for Yasna's character, like, story in this book? Like, what role does she have? She, like, you know, she had some stuff early in the book with Hoyd and this whole contract situation, and then was kind of the one to, like, pick up the to be charged with the defense of the city, which is, like, I'm also a little bit sad because I feel like I've loved actually learning about, like, with Adolin and Yonagon and all the people in that area, like, learning a little bit about, like, this new, like, community and things that we didn't have as much insight into in my head. I almost wanted a little more of that with Yasna's story as well. That is still very, very, very possible, because we've had a lot of Adolin that's now toning back. We're having Sigzil, etc. So all to be determined on that. But basically, that leaves me with the question of where does Yasna's story go? It is a naive question of me looking at the page count of this book, I imagine. I'm sure there's still plenty of time for things to happen with her character. But I'm glad you pointed out, because she is an Elskaller and she could absolutely look to back up whoever else. Like, there are absolutely ways that she could come to someone's aid. We will see how that goes, because she may have that an avenue of that trolley question you're asking, Elliot, of like, do I look to try to save Adolin or Sigzil, or, like, you know, what do I do if she is met with such a conundrum And that could very well be her story, and that would be quite a challenging one. So, yeah, I'm kind of left wondering right now. I kind of agree with you a little bit as well, Trevor. I have enjoyed these sieges and these battles more than I originally intended. I underestimated how fun a final book, or final like chapter, if you will, like battle scene can just be in a fantasy story, you know? So that is cool. But the others have done a great job. And so if this one isn't and it leads to something else, I'm all for it. So I have hope in Brandon's writing and this story that it will be good either way. So right now I'm very, very hopeful about that.
I just had a thought when you called her an else caller, which she is. Could she go help Shallan?
No, that I don't think she could. Maybe that,
in theory, if she's powerful enough, and she's shown us before that she can be not to be underestimated. Don't underestimate Yasna at your peril.
Right.
She could do the whole else caller portal thing to like maybe anywhere.
Yeah,
but Can she perpendicularity her way into the spiritual realm?
I want to say no, but it actually could be a pretty cool storyline if Yasna and Shallan end up back together at the end, like towards the end of this book, as they were together towards the beginning of this series. And so now I'm wondering if she sends her army somewhere, and then she personally goes to help out Renarin and Shallan, because she has a special relationship with her cousin Renarin, as we saw in Oathbringer. They, you know, Yasna almost killed Renarin at the end of that book, and then didn't. And then, you know, obviously the relationship between Yasna and Shallan. So, with Yasna, assuming she's suddenly available here, I wonder if she might end up in the spiritual realm.
Call me a doubter, call me lame, whatever you want. I don't think she could jump to the spiritual realm unless she gets a little assistance or something from Hoyt, or there's another incident or something.
Yeah.
I'm like, maybe somewhere with like a fifth ideal coming out, if that's the case, which I think fifth idea, if our people start swearing fifth ideals, I think that helps my bingo boards. I don't remember for sure, but I feel like I have that on there. So I'm for it. I vote for that.
Here's for your bingo board, Paul. She goes and helps Adolin. This is Elliot's board. She goes and helps Adolin. Adolin becomes a bondsmith, sends Yasna to go help Shallan in the spiritual realm. Yeah, that's Elliot's board. Sorry, Paul.
There we go. And you'd have three Colins as the three bondsmiths.
Yeah, there you go.
Be epic.
All right. Anything else for this episode, gentlemen?
Nothing else pressing. I think this was a fun episode, good chapters. I think this is, I could be totally off. It feels like this is the first chapter in a long time that we haven't had anything related to Dalinar in. I don't remember. So someone will probably comment and be like, yep, literally last week y'all didn't talk about Dalinar or something. So I could be totally off, but it feels like it. And so I'm curious to see where they are, where our spiritual realm people are.
Yeah, last week we drafted backyard baseball teams, and I don't think Dalinar made the cut. So, yeah, maybe we did not talk about Dalinar week.
I want to make one comment about something about the baseball team, Elliot. I'm glad you mentioned that. I got to thinking more afterward. You know, a pick that we all overlooked that would have been amazing is Shallan. Because Shallan, by herself, if she has Radiant and Radiant and what's the other one? I feel so dumb.
Mistborn? Right,
Veil, yes. Radiant and Veil.
Oh, that Radiant.
then, and they could be physical enough that you've got your whole outfield in just one player. You know, our teams are only five. Our teams are only five people. So she herself could be the whole outfield, which is a big advantage. And we all overlooked that. And so I was thinking about that later. So I think I would absolutely swap in Shallan.
I haven't listened to that full episode, but the brief section I did listen to, Elliot drafts Vin, and Elliot says Vin's like a dark horse to draft. What on earth are you guys talking about? Vin is the ascendant warrior and you're calling her a dark horse? Like, she is the draft. What are you talking about?
She's like, I agree. Vin is impressive. I'm very glad I got her on my team, especially with my later pick of Human the Coloss, which I think was actually my trump card. But Vin is also like 5 foot nothing and not all that impressive. I think
she's even shorter than that
physically. Yeah. So I think that makes her a dark horse. Not many people are going to pick her out of a lineup when you're looking for athletes.
You're right. I think any Mistborn character is a top pick instantly. Any full Mistborn, I'm like, you've just got too much of everything that you'd be good at everything. So
it's true.
Alrighty. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot. We will reconvene with chapters 72 through 75 for next week. See you guys then.
Laters.
Toodles.
Come on, you Spurs. Beat Man United tomorrow.